It is non-farm payrolls in the US tonight. If the pressure is coming off employment and wages, then when will the Fed cut? Well, Jerome Powell was certainly sounding a little more committed to cuts when he spoke to the US Senate today. And Japan, wages are rising were there. Will that spur the Bank of Japan into action? Could they be lifting before anyone drops their rates? And China's exports jump up. Are they getting back into action? It's Friday. It's the 8th of March, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, a further fall in the US dollar today. It's down 0.5% on the DXY. That's helped the Aussie, which is up another 0.8%, up to 66.2 US cents, the sort of territory that we're in early January. The euro is up 0.4%, a 0.6% rise in the pound. The yen is up 0.9%. The Nasdaq bouncing back and higher again. It's up 1.5% today. That's at close, 1% for the S&P, 0.3% for the Dow. The Russell 2000 is up 0.8% as well. No stop the tech euphoria. Meta is up 3.25% today. Nvidia up 4.5%. But European stocks also doing okay. 1.2% higher for the Euro Stoxx 50, 0.7% for the DAX, just 0.2% for the FTSE 100. Small moves in bonds. 10-year treasuries down 1 basis point. German 10-year bunds are down 2. Aussie 10 years yesterday stuck at 4.01%, stuck there on futures overnight as well. Japan's 10-year government bond yields are up just 1 basis point. Not any movement at the front end of the curve, even though there's a bit of talk around today about what the Bank of Japan will do and whether they're getting set to move. And oil is lower. WTI is down 0.3%. Brent down 0.1%. Not much to see there, really. So let's move on and let's talk to Gavin Friend, who's joining us from London. He's been watching the ECB overnight. We'll talk about that in a second. You don't want to talk about that. No, you want to start talking about bonds, first of all, even though overnight, you know, pretty quiet, but looking back, there's a bit of a trend.
There is. Morning, Phil. I mean, just, you know, on the day, we've been wanging around on the yields down and then up again. We can talk about that. But actually, the broader lower yield theme that's been in place now for a couple of weeks, I mean, it's worth mentioning. You know, we're down, you know, what, 25 basis points in the 2-year in the US, nearly that in the 10-year, slightly smaller than that, really, in Europe and the UK. We're lower in Australia, we're lower in New Zealand. We can talk about some weaker data that we've had in Australia. We can talk about the idea that the RBNZ, when it last met, was perhaps slightly less hawkish than expected and some weaker numbers there. So there's a whole number of things that are playing through to this, including, you know, perhaps a lack of upside or nasty data surprises in the US for a little bit, you know, after the sort of scare that we've had. Core PCE most recently, you know, higher, but not above forecast. Comments from Chair Powell over the last couple of days in his congressional testimony on Capitol Hill, which we can talk on. And then, of course, the ECB today. So there's a sort of a, you know, a confluence of things that are coming together that after the sort of jolt that markets have had, you know, where some observers have worried about whether the Fed might cut rates at all this year. There's been some forecasts of that. We had that kind of, you know, disinflationary process in Europe, which had been going great, and then it stalled as we said it would do. But we've also said it would restart, and it has restarted. And so, you know,
so we're back on track for cuts. Yes, is basically what you're saying. Yes, market's starting to do that. And you mentioned Jerome Powell, so he said a bit more, didn't he, in his Senate Banking Committee overnight. He didn't say a great deal yesterday, but he said, you know, there would be cuts this year. We're becoming more confident that inflation is moving sustainably to 2%. When we do get that confidence, and we're not far from it. I think that was the key word, wasn't it?
That's
It'll be appropriate
right.
to begin to dial back on the level of restrictions, he said.
I think even yesterday, you know, he was saying we just need you know, that point is made before about we don't need better data, we just need more of the same, you know, quotes like a little bit more. And I think you know, yesterday we've heard the same sort of rhetoric, and I see Loretta Mester out there again saying that for her, I mean, it's not Jay Powell, but for her, she wants to see inflation down a couple more prints. You know, which suggests, you know, what, a couple more months, that certainly no later than June for her. She's not the entire committee, of course, but it seems to gel with what Jay Powell is saying. And, you know, that's giving the market a little bit of confidence, I think, on that point.
So everyone's back to looking at June, and you know, for the ECB as well. So, I mean, they came, they met, they kept rates on hold, but they talked about good progress on bringing down inflation. They've got new forecasts showing that. They've got lower growth in those forecasts as well. Mm. So June is looking even more likely now, isn't it, after those numbers?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we had been expecting lower inflation forecasts at this meeting, and we thought that maybe they might do this in a sort of a two-step phase in the March meeting and then the June meeting when they get the new forecasts again. In the event, they've done it a bit more aggressively. You know, sort of headline inflation for 2024 comes from 2.7 to 2.3. We're down at 2 from 2.1 for next year. Core inflation is lower as well. You know, we still see headline inflation dropping below the 2% target within the next few months. It seems as though the ECB has grown increasingly confident of that as well, but now that disinflation has started again or restarted. You know, we heard from ECB President Lagarde saying that the progress on disinflation, you know, is made them more confident, but not sufficiently confident yet to move. She said the ECB will know more in April, but a lot more in June. And so that, you know, for us and for other observers, you know, tees up the market really for a June move. The 6th of June is when the ECB next meet.
But what about beyond that? What about other cuts beyond June? I mean, how many are forecast in? Because if they've got their forecast and they're saying inflation is going to come down and this is what growth is going to look like, they must be basing that on an assumption of where their interest rates are going to be, because obviously that's going to influence that figure. So do we have a handle on how many cuts we think they are now expecting this year?
Well, of course, you know, as we know, market expectations have really moved around. In December, the market was pricing for the Fed and the ECB about 175 basis points. That's been chopped completely by 100 basis points or so, certainly for the Fed. For the ECB, almost there, but now back to 100. And we've been, you know, pretty consistent since October saying we expected 100 basis points of cuts from the ECB this year. We did think they'd move in April, but we've been saying the last couple of months, clearly the evidence has been accumulating that the risk is that they're going to go in June. That now seems much more certain, providing there are no sort of, you know, shocks that we can't see at this point. And of course, there are certainly are risks there. But so 100 basis points is pretty much where the market is looking for. And if it, actually, you know, Christine Lagarde was asked about market pricing, and she's for obvious reason very wary about going there because she doesn't want to give the market a target. But she said that that actually things were becoming much more aligned, basically, there. So, you know, again, it's a sign that the ECB is increasingly confident on that. I mean, I would say that they lowered their growth forecast for 2024 from 0.8 to an even more meagre 0.6. I wouldn't get too focused on that, because that's a backward looking indicator in terms of it reflects where we are, you know, a very weak start to this year, because, you know, the Eurozone was flat and stagnating at the end of 2023. Germany obviously in recession, and thereby that's very hard mathematically for them to get a decent run this year. The point that they are making and that we are making is that you know, the market at large has been a bit gloomy really on Eurozone growth. And actually, if you think about the things that are going to drive it this year, you know, as inflation comes down and yet wages hold up, so real incomes get a boost, in energy prices are low and staying lower, and then we'll get those rate cuts, you know, you can be more optimistic that there's a better path ahead. And, you know, given what we've said this before, but the Eurozone and the UK, I mean, they've suffered such huge headwinds over the last 3 years from a number of different sides. The fact that they've just stagnated and not gone into a deep recession, now is not the point, as these headwinds start to fade, to start to think that things are going to get worse. Actually, they're going to get better from here. Of course, they're not as good as the US, but you know, it's an encouraging good news story. Yes,
but and if China is back, so we look at China's exports, much higher in the latest trade data, up 7.1% for January to February. So the global demand is picking up for China. Semiconductors are a chunk of that, of course, and it's easier to see high growth off a low base as well, of course. But you know, could we see that, you know, China is going to influence this global trend as well over the rest of this year as they come back, create more demand, create more supply, perhaps spread a bit more deflation as well? I mean, that's all good news.
Well, of course, we've learned from China this week, haven't we, that they're aiming for a 5% growth rate. We've also learned that actually getting to that point is going to demand all sorts of, you know, assistance from all sorts of areas. It's not going to be easy, and not least because the 4.6% or so that they managed to get in 2023 was from a low base, and the base, of course, for this year is going to be higher, so it's going to be hard to get. But they are doing stuff. In terms of what the latest trade numbers suggest, I'd be a little bit wary, because actually, if you look at if you dive really beneath the bonnet and you look at where the exports surprise on the upside, 7% year on year in February versus, you know, from 2.3 in December, above the consensus by some mile, some margin. It was all really exports to some of their sort of emerging market partner, trade partners, you know, whether it be sort of LATAM or India or Africa. Actually, exports to, you know, Asia, Japan, Europe were actually lower. The US, moderate, but not great. So, you know, we need to see what this means, really. It doesn't mean to say it's not sustainable, but if your traditional areas of export growth are fading, you know, it certainly raises a question mark about what's going on there. And I think, you know, the sort of general comment out of this week's meetings in China has been that this is not going to be easy, and there's going to be a lot of work to do, you know. But the point we've also made is globally, you know, you've got some easing of tensions in terms of, you know, the rate tensions and you know, potential for rate cuts this year. China, you know, again, is going to be looking at easier policy. And global manufacturing seems to be, you know, picking up a little bit. It seems, you know, that there's room for optimism that the PMIs are going to get back to 50 pretty much soon, you know, and the service sector already back above 50. So globally, you know, that should help out.
Yeah, well, we get to China's inflation rate tomorrow morning as well, Saturday lunchtime, basically Australia time. Trade number wise, we had Australia's trade surplus yesterday stuck around the 11 billion mark in January's data. So exports up a little bit more than imports. Well, actually a fall in the rate of imports, but I guess that sort of reflects the lower consumption that we've been seeing. US trade, that showed little change, really. A slight widening in the trade deficit. It's only $67 billion for January. That's all. They seem to get away with it. But, you know, what really counts now is, obviously, non-farm payrolls. We get Canada's unemployment rate before that, but non-farm payrolls, obviously, the big number today. And let's remind ourselves, last time, average hourly earnings were still up at 4.5% year-on-year. And rising 0.6% month on month. So we would really like to see that come down a bit, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and the consensus is that it will drop back to 0.2, and that January was a bit of a blip. I think in terms of the headline job creation, 353,000 last month was double the consensus. There's an element of seasonality here. You know, you read around this and there's a fear that, well, look at the consensus, it's 200,000 for later today. That's still above the sort of run rate that we were experiencing in the last few months. So I think, you know, there's a sense of we need to get through this February report and some of those seasonality issues start to fade away in terms of job creation. So that, you know, if that, again, that means we're going to have to wait another month for that to happen unless we get a surprise later today. But I think to your point about earnings, you know, that was a bit of a shock. We'd expect that to drop back down to 0.2. It seems when you look at, you know, the language from Chair Powell, they're not particularly, you know, alerted to some of these data spikes. They seem to be prepared to look through it. We saw in the prices index of the ISM earlier this week, you know, a run of 58 and changes, 64 last month, and then this month back to 58, you know, so that spike there looked like a bit of an outlier. So there's reason to be, you know, optimistic that things are returning perhaps to a more even keel. But clearly, for all actors in this space, you know, there's a little way to go, and when we do have a couple of months before those June meetings come up, you know, there's plenty of data.
There can always be surprises, can't there? Like, for example, we saw in Japan, so look at those wage earnings number for Japan yesterday, 2% up year on year in January, up from 1.2%, which has got everyone thinking now, well, this is it, the Boj is going to have to move out of a negative net territory maybe as soon as their March meeting, based on these numbers.
Well, you know, it's a confluence of things. It was that, as you say, that nominal cash earnings number, that's the fastest since June. Real wages, of course, are still falling. But then we had some numbers out from various unions, the Zensen Union, which is mainly, as I understand it, retail. and food unions, 1.8 million workers representative, coming in for demanding 6.18%. The Japan Trade Union Confederation, Rengo, was demanding 5.85 versus 4.49 last year. All of these are ahead of the big spring wage round, the Shunto, which we'll get on the 15th, the sort of results of that. But actually, as I understand it, some of the big unions are going to be giving their numbers out on the 13th for some big companies. So, you know, we might know more about that, you know, and that kind of suggests to your point about, you know, the next BOJ meeting, it might be a bit soon of that in terms of getting the virtuous circle. But comments in the media that various you know, members of the government are suggesting that things are moving in the right direction. So it's a confluence of all these things coming together that's got the market excited. On a move, and if you look at pricing, we're getting up towards sort of 10 basis points or so. For the next couple of meetings, so. All to play for, but I think for us, an April meeting would perhaps give, if the numbers are coming in where we can see them coming in, and then maybe they'll have a bit more confidence. Because remember, the backstory about all this is not just where they think they are now, but whether they've got the confidence that it's going to be sustainable.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, look, talking about Japan, we'll say thank you for that for now, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks, Phil.
And the Japanese connection I'm talking about is that we are talking to an Aussie lady who has lived in Japan for 25 years. She sits on four major Japanese boards, and for International Women's Day, we're talking to her about the role of women in Japanese business and how it's being forced to change because of the demographics, because of demand from investors and from business partners. I put it to her that the view of many is that you walk into a Japanese company where there's a woman who meets you in a rather subservient role to take you to the meeting room where the men talk. And is that changing?
Oh, of course that doesn't sit with me other than the fact that I know that those roles are also highly regarded. The women working in those roles sometimes work there and then move around within the company.
And there's some interesting observations about respect. So wait for the question about what Australian businesses could learn from Japan at the end of that episode. It's out this afternoon. The weekend edition with Melanie Brock is the lady's name. Definitely worth 20 minutes of your time this weekend. So listen out for that. And I'll be back again on Monday morning for another edition of The Morning Call. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. See you then.